S. Berlin, the Fox Valley's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media Station.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. Lawmakers in the Northeast continue to call for more authority to deal with drones, as federal authorities say the devices first spotted over New Jersey pose no imminent threat. But Congressman Chris Smith of New Jersey says more needs to be done.
Sheriff Golden wrote me a few days ago requesting legislation to empower the state police to seriously protect at-risk persons and infrastructure, and if necessary, bring down a dangerous drone or drones. I am now drafting that bill and will soon introduce it.
For the first time on record, San Francisco was under a tornado warning Saturday. None were reported, but there was an 83-mile-an-hour wind gust at the international airport. One tornado did touch down north of Santa Cruz. President Biden spoke with South Korea's acting president. The country is in a political crisis after the parliament voted to impeach the sitting prime minister. And President-elect Trump watched Navy upset Army at the annual Navy-Army football game. This is ABC News. Actor and singer Jamie Foxx is recovering after he was hit in the face with a glass at a famous Beverly Hills restaurant Friday.
Police say it was just after 10 p.m. on Friday night when they got a call of an assault with a deadly weapon at Mr. Chow Restaurant in Beverly Hills. When officers arrived, they determined that was unfounded, but there had been a fight. Beverly Hills police are calling it a battery and are investigating. Jamie Foxx's team says Foxx was at his birthday dinner when someone at another table threw a glass that hit Foxx in the mouth, causing him to need stitches. It's unclear if he was involved in the fight or was an innocent bystander. Alex Stone, ABC News, Los Angeles.
Chuck Hildebrand took out a book called Baseball Zaniest Stars from the library in Warren, Michigan, but he did it 50 years ago, and now he's 63 and realized he still had the book. He decided to keep it until it was 50 years overdue, then return it, but the library director said he can keep it with no fine. I'm Brian Clark, ABC News.
Hey, it's John Mino.
And Jim Schmidt from Mino and the Mayor.
Want to stay in the loop with all things Northeast Wisconsin? Sign up for the WISS weekly newsletter.
Get the latest local stories, updates on the weather, and a special feature from our Mino and the Mayor podcast.
It's your one-stop shop for real news and great conversations in Northeast Wisconsin.
Log on to WISS.FM today and get signed up.
Real news, great conversations. Get signed up today at WISS.FM/newsletter.
The holidays are here, and it's nearly time to pick a present from our grown-up gift list with our Civic Media statewide text-to-win contest. Listen while you work for the keywords to text for your chance to win $100 cash, an overnight vacation at Chula Vista Resort, and be entered to win one of our grand prizes, a robot vacuum, new luggage, humidifier, espresso machine, and more on our grown-up gift list at civicmedia.us. Just download the Civic Media app and listen weekdays at 7, 11, 1, and 4 for your chance to win in our statewide contest.
I'm Lisa Hale with WISS News. Your news roundup in quick podcast form. You can find it anytime at the WISS website at WISS.FM.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. The lawsuit over Act 10 will almost certainly end up in front of the Wisconsin Supreme Court, intensifying the race for a seat on the bench in the spring. Here's Judith Ruiz Branch.
The judge ruled Act 10 is unconstitutional because it treats different groups of public employees unequally. The controversial 13-year-old law strictly limits public sector bargaining rights in Wisconsin. Michael Childers is a labor education professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He says the law also brought the state back more than 50 years, as Wisconsin was a pioneer in the fight for workers' legal rights.
It was the first state in the nation that allowed formally for public sector bargaining and then became the first to basically greatly curtail bargaining rights for all but police and fire in the state.
Act 10 would be struck down pending a final decision by the Wisconsin Supreme Court, which currently has a liberal majority. The Republican-controlled legislature that appealed the recent decision is hoping to drag out the case. But the public workers who challenged the law hope the court rules before a new justice is seated next year. Wisconsin's public sector laws of 1959 and 1962 are regarded as turning points in the legal rights of workers. Childers says Wisconsin's union participation was always higher than the national average until the passage of Act 10 in 2011.
They had rights similar to what most workers in the private sector in the United States enjoyed, which is the ability to bargain over hours, wages, and all other conditions of work.
Childers says Wisconsin experienced the largest decline of union membership in the U.S. over the past decade. For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
Enjoying this local program?
Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. A little rain in the morning, otherwise patchy fog, clouds and highs in the lower 40s, a light southeast breeze. Overnight, the clouds stay with us, lows only dropping back to the upper 30s. Then on Monday, cloudy and breezy with highs in the lower 40s. Right now, it's 37.
From Oshkosh to Neenah, this is 98.3 WISS.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Portions of Native Roots Radio may be pre-recorded.
You're listening to the best of Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake. I'm your host, Wakunjahade, Distant Thunder. My colonized name is Robert Pilot. We discuss national and local Native American news and events. As we all know, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
It's a good day to be indigenous.
Get up, stand up.
They are going to become more brutal.
Couldn't cut, any cut again.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, victors!
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunjahade. Hey, Karigi to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. We discuss local, national, Native news and events, and as you know, Chujunk, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
Yes, you are right, Dega. This portion of the show is supported by J.S. Bean Factory off Randolph Avenue in St. Paul. Only the good stuff keeps us awake.
Yes, we are awake. Hey, a lot going on this weekend. Today we got Ruth Anna Buffalo coming on, and really excited to see Ruth, and she's been doing a lot of things, and it's fun because we're able to like scope on what she's doing on Facebook and and all those other formats. So it's going to be we can grill her on all the things that we've seen.
I'm excited to talk to Ruth this week. It looks like she's doing a lot of traveling out there in DC and doing some good work. So yeah, excited to talk to her. We're also going to be talking with Minnesota Historical Society's Native American Initiatives Program with Rita Walczyk-Arndt. Our good friend will be back for her biweekly updates later on.
I know. They're all our good friends, aren't they?
Yeah.
Well, right now, Wendy's slaving in the other room, getting ready to set up for the market in Shakopee. And yeah. Let me tell you, there's a lot of things going on here right now, and we're going to be ready for the big market out there.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So many markets going on right now. Just perfect timing for the holidays if you need to get your holiday shopping done for your loved ones, your relatives. It's really important to support indigenous and native owned businesses and crafts and vendors. So when you go to the market, definitely check everyone out, ask who made it, because sometimes the vendors, you know, might not always be the creators, so they can give you some information on who made it and maybe some, you know, cool stories on why they chose those colors in their skirt or their beads or something cool.
I like it too. We make resin earrings and necklaces and ornaments, and there's some cool big turtles Wendy's made too. And the fun thing is that, you know, people that know, we have our relatives come up and ask, this was prayed over, and absolutely we smudge off all the art that we're making here, and you know, every bead has a prayer and every pour has a prayer. So it's just a cool vibe, and helping support us and our Native artists. And we're going to have the book Banished down there too for sale. And I just picked up a bunch of those. So come on down. Kathy Coates.
What is, so the book you're talking about, To Banish Forever, A Secret Society of the Ho-Chunk and Ethnic Cleansing in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. If, you know, that's a real historian book that was vetted out by a lot of Ho-Chunk members and tribal members and elders. I think, like, not only if you're Native or not, or Ho-Chunk or not, like, it's good information that a lot of people didn't know about history on Minnesota. Because we talk about, you know, Dakota land here and Ojibwe land up north. But the Ho-Chunks often, their story gets left out.
Yeah, good point. And so this brings it to life and, you know, what happened to us. And again, we you know, people are always astonished when I say, you know, it's illegal for Ho-Chunks to live in this state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've read a few pages in that book that were, like, just very surprising that even I didn't know, learning from my immediate Ho-Chunk family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And so... yeah, that'll be there, and I'm not sure. I'll have to look, but I know she usually autographs them, too. I know she just got a big batch. So that's going to be – we're going to be at the Shakopee Cultural Center Thursday through Saturday.
Awesome, and that's Native Roots Trading Post, and I'm sure a ton of other vendors will be there, so great for holiday shopping. And that address, the Shakopee Cultural Center, it's called, like, the Hokata Tea, and that address is 2300 Tawahi Circle in Shakopee.
Yeah, definitely. Look for the big, I don't know how many are there. There are, like, six big teepees you can see from the road.
Yeah, for sure.
And when I say big teepees, I mean, like, really big, so... they're not
bigger
they're not
than
the
normal
kind,
ones.
They're not the kind you'd live in.
Oh yeah, okay. Well, you're gonna be there Thursday through Sunday, right?
Yeah.
Is that a whole weekend?
Yeah. Cool. Definitely pinch hitting for the kids because they've got some other family commitments happening, and of course Jaleesa's in the play.
Oh yeah, that's right. It's New Native Theater's Blood Quantum Physics.
Yeah, and that's fun, and get out there and see that. And where is that? The Gremlin Theater? Is that right?
Gremlin Theater in St. Paul, yeah. And if you go...
I always think, is that really the name?
Gremlin. I know, it reminds me of that movie. Yeah, Dr. Exactly. Stately brought that movie up yesterday on the show. Gremlins?
I don't know. I wasn't listening.
Oh, well, that's cool.
No, that's, yeah, I was. That was funny. Yeah, so what else is going on?
Well, I want to do a shout out quick before we get Ruth on. I want to shout out our Lekwungen Ray Ojibwe Wisconsin tribal member, Donna and Dennis Dunlap. I don't know if anyone heard earlier this week, we got to talk to them quickly about how they're helping out other tribal relatives this holiday season. So if you're an LCO Ojibwe Wisconsin tribal member and you're looking to get your holiday check from the tribe, but you are unable to get that because they're not mailing them. So you have to be in person on reservation to get those holiday checks this year. But our friends at Native Blend LLC in Michigan, Donis and Denna are helping relatives by mailing them their checks. And they're doing that free for service. And you just have to contact them and you can get their contact information by going to Native Blend.
Yeah, definitely. And then while you're on there, check out their site too, because they have a store too. And that's excellent.
Handmade soaps and lots of natural stuff.
Definitely. Well, and then so there's other markets going on too. I see Indigenous Roots Cultural Arts Center in St. Paul is hosting another Native night market on February 13th from 5 to 8, and that's 788 East 7th Street for you East Siders.
I know this Indigenous Roots Cultural Arts Center has been putting on these night markets like the past few Fridays, I think the past couple months, but it's always got a great turnout. And yes, it's in St. Paul, so if you're afraid to travel across the river or to Minneapolis, this is, you know, close to you. Also want to shout out Jamie Becker Finn, representative Jamie Becker Finn, who retired this past election season, but she owns Mukwa Coffee in Roseville, and they're doing their annual holiday market tomorrow, Wednesday, December 11th, from 4 to 8 p.m. And again, that's at Mukwa Coffee in Roseville.
Yeah, I was going to have you say that. I'm glad you did.
Mukwa. It's Ojibwe word. It means bear.
Wow. She must be from the bear clan, or it's a bear of a coffee cup, or bear of a flavored coffee.
It's a good name regardless.
I know.
Like if we had a Ho-Chunk bear coffee shop, would that be Hoonch? It'd be like Hoonch Coffee.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yum.
Franchise it. Just there you go. Of hey, keep
that between us. What are you, crazy? Jeez. We're gonna get that oven going and cranking out some beans tonight.
Beans?
You know, coffee beans.
Oh, okay.
That's where
I don't know how you like
from.
Yeah, you might have to grow those or like it might take a while.
Yeah.
I know Mako is like good, really known for their homemade bakery items too. They always go fast, so you have to get there in the morning right when they open.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. Well, looks like we're gonna jump into break here and we have a minute left, and again we're gonna have our friend Ruth Anna Buffalo on, CEO of Minnesota Indian Women's Resource Center, and like we've been spying on her. We see her all over the country, and so we're excited to get a report and get an update on Minnesota Indian Women's Resource Center, what's happening there. So we're really always happy to have Ruth Anna Buffalo on. We'll be right back. This is Native Roots Radio.
Stay with us.
You're listening to Oshkosh Air Support, WISS, home for the Maggie Dawn Show.
Mino and the Mayor.
I'm going to admit something that I normally would not admit. A lot of times I don't wear underwear.
We got to go to a break.
I don't have a cart, and I'm carrying this stuff.
Yeah.
I got my finger in the loop, holding my pants up, because they would literally go down. And twice, people stop me. Hey, John Mino, as I'm trying to hold my pants up and hold my stuff in my arms.
Mino and the Mayor, weekday morning 6 till 9 on 97.9 WGBW and 98.3 WISS.
Ever tried balancing a dozen eggs in one hand while hopping on one foot? Or maybe juggling cats while riding the unicycle? Sounds ridiculous, right? But guess what? That's exactly what texting while driving is like. Your human brain only has the capacity to focus on one thing at a time. So when you're behind the wheel, give driving your undivided attention.
Don't drive distracted. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Oshkosh Air Support, WISS, the Fox Valley's home of Mino and the Mayor.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Hi, this is Governor Walz. Thank you for listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by Native American Community Development Institute, or NACD, in Minneapolis.
Hey, like you said, we have our friend Ruth Anna Buffalo, CEO of Minnesota Indian Women's Resource Center here in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis. And always great to see you, Ruth. Oh.
I know. I think we lost her.
Yeah.
She is traveling, so she might be on the road.
Yeah.
In yeah. out of service.
Yeah. So now what do we talk about?
I don't know. I was excited to talk to Ruth. Hopefully she can jump back on here. She was at the 2024 White House Tribal Nations Summit, which I thought was cool. I don't really know what that is. I was kind of hoping you could explain that a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. Well, let's get her back on as soon as we can. You know, again, we'll back up, and I really can't stop talking about this when it comes to all these markets or wherever you're going. When you see anything that seems fishy, ask people like who made this when it comes to the markets. Native inspired, that's not native stuff, that's basically stolen. And so we want to educate people out there. And again, you know, if you see a fresh set of earrings like at Native Roots Trading Post or any other vendor, anyone can wear those. Those are there, and you're supporting our artists. And I just saw somebody say hello, Nelly, or my cousin, from Wisconsin, and you know, we went to the same high school too. I think I'm a year older than Nelly. But she's a lot more mature. But it's always good to see her at General Council or whenever I get into Wisconsin. So we love our relatives there, Haley.
Oh, for sure. Shout out Nellie McKee and all of our McKee relatives.
Well, yeah. And you know where that name comes from, right?
First name?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Nellie Hoop.
Great, great grandma.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Named great, after.
Great, great. That would be my second grade, I think.
Yeah. You're a generation behind, so yeah.
Yeah.
Or ahead, one of the way or the other. But it's always great to see Nellie. And every once in a while, Nellie, I pull out the old Central Yearbook and take a gander at us when we're so young.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah. To dust, I have to dust off the yearbook, but
yeah.
We're definitely all in, we're all definitely in black and white pictures.
Wow.
Yeah.
Way back in the day.
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, well Ruth fell off and maybe she's on the other side of the globe where it doesn't, you know, because the planet's round and she's not getting the signal, but she was on earlier. And so I know you talked a little about Becker Finn.
Yeah.
And I just want to say a couple things about her that I remember, you know, when she first got in as state legislator, that she was being attacked all the time and pulling, you know, not backing down. And yeah. I just got to give her all the credit in the world. And she's going to be greatly missed in the state representation at the Capitol. But, you know, you can only take so much of this. And I'm finding that out in my other life and job.
Yeah, politics definitely, you know, is meant for certain people. But it's so good. Like, I feel like every time we have a DFL person on, they talk about the variety of people that they work with, like different teachers or lawyers. It's just such like a wide variety of people, and they really can put all of their unique experiences together to get more work done.
Hey, and before we have Ruth Anna Buffalo on, Dennis Dunlap, as a matter of fact, the person that you guys should be getting in touch with, you should also question and ask about where the herbs are acquired. And I think that's a good thing to talk about too. I don't think we talk about that enough.
Yeah. And by like herbs, I'm assuming like medicine and sage and cedar.
Teas. Because we have a lot of sacred teas that, you know, that we don't want, you know, duplicated and stolen. Hey, Ruth Anna Buffalo, how are you doing?
Good, good. How are you?
Pretty good, pretty good. We see you're like a globetrotter here. We've seen pictures of you in Washington, and you and your daughter are hanging out with some good friends of ours.
Yeah, we were in D.C. last week, got invited to Vice President Kamala Harris and Second Gentleman Doug Emhoff's holiday reception. So we were there, and yeah, it was nice. It was cheerful, you know, holiday atmosphere, and was able to give a Freedom for Peltier pin to Doug Emhoff's second gentleman's staffer, and asked him to relay a message kindly to Vice President Kamala Harris, you know, to encourage President Joe Biden to grant our elder Leonard Peltier clemency. So it was definitely just kind of weaving in some advocacy as usual, I guess, that all of us do, you know, where we can from within our reach. And then yesterday we were able to had received an invite and was thankful that my daughter was able to attend. And that was the 2024 White House Tribal Nations Summit. And it was good. It was kind of sad in a way, hearing sort of like farewell speeches and things and addresses from, you know, Secretary Deborah Holland and also President Joe Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris. But again, they're putting a plug in for Leonard Peltier's clemency. I know many others there as well who are working behind the scenes. I believe a documentary is going to be screened today out in D.C. Regarding Leonard and the efforts and advocacy for his freedom. So lots of things moving for sure behind the scenes that those efforts are not letting up for sure.
Wow, that's awesome. Did you ever hear the story when I met President Obama? You ever?
I'm not sure.
No. So I, you know, because our nation really supports both parties, and I got to meet him, and I had a free Leonard Peltier big button on, and I wanted to tell him to tell his buddy at the time, Joe Biden, President Biden, to, you know, give him clemency. But I only saw him for like 15 seconds, and he was so charismatic. I shook his hand. I wet my pants and took the picture and then left. I mean, these guys are charismatic, aren't they? I mean,
yeah, no, it was Kamala was tinier than I expected. But I mean, of course, that's coming from a Hidatsa Mandan woman. But yeah, she, you know, seemed very, very tiny. and then, you know, Deb Haaland always is tiny when she stands in between my daughter and I. But yeah, it was good. And yeah, they're definitely charismatic. My daughter, I just kept thinking of like what kind of experience was it for her, you know, and she was able to shake Kamala's hand, and I don't want to speak for her, but she had shared words of what so she was being a little timid in the crowd. And so I kind of reached in and shook Kamala's hand and then ushered my daughter towards her, said, "Here's my daughter." And so Maya reached out her hand and shook her hand. But Maya said to her, "Thank you for all that you do." And then Vice President Kamala Harris said, "We do this together." Like she motioned it, like, "We do this together." And my daughter was like just beaming, you know. She also got to shake President Joe Biden's hand yesterday too. So, you know, as a young person, and her worldview, of course, is different from everyone else's too. You know, everybody carries that unique perspective. But yeah, it was, I think being in these spaces is so important to, as they say, bring more with you. And it's like, yeah, I get invited to go places, but it's kind of like meaningless too if it's just me. You know, I'd rather like share these experiences with others, and especially if my children too, so they have a little bit of insight of like what's going on when I'm on these trips and what the purpose and intent really is. It's to advocate for all of us for sure, including our elder Leonard Peltier.
Yeah, that's something your daughter is going to carry with her, and you're really educating the future generations, which is our job. And that's awesome. And that you're bringing her to these. And, and you know, what I've found out over the years too, Ruth, is that, you know, our politicians put on their ribbon skirt the same way everybody else does, and one foot at a time. And if you talk to them and get a chance to talk to them, don't be intimidated. They work for us.
Yes. Yep, for sure. Exactly. And I think that was one of the hardest things I had to kind of, one thing that like was loud and clear for me when I was in office was that people sort of carried this huge stigma of like a politician. And it's like, I'm just a mom, I'm a daughter, and be nice, you know, don't be mean to me. But you know, it's
yeah,
like,
exactly,
you know, because they have a lot of pressure too. And it's like, look wrong, you know, if you unintentionally are in a deep thought, it could be misinterpreted as like you're mean mugging someone, or, you know, so I don't know. It's like you're in this fishbowl and you're under this huge magnifying glass that it's one false move and, you know, it could be not good.
Well, I was intimidated by you. I think the first time I met you was at Wounded Knee in person.
I hope I'm not an intimidated person. I hope I'm pretty like approachable. No. And yeah, no problem.
Well, it's more out of respect, Ruth Anna Buffalo. You've done so much. Hey, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. Stay with us. Native Roots Radio.
Welcome to the Fox Valley's Real News and Great Conversation, WISS.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. Lawmakers in the Northeast continue to call for more authority to deal with drones, as federal authorities say the devices first spotted over New Jersey pose no imminent threat. But Congressman Chris Smith of New Jersey says more needs to be done.
Sheriff Golden wrote me a few days ago requesting legislation
to empower the state police to seriously protect at-risk persons and infrastructure, and if necessary, bring down a dangerous drone or drones. I am now drafting that bill and will soon introduce it.
For the first time on record, San Francisco was under a tornado warning Saturday. None were reported, but there was an 83-mile-an-hour wind gust at the international airport. One tornado did touch down north of Santa Cruz. President Biden spoke with South Korea's acting president. The country's in a political crisis after the parliament voted to impeach the sitting prime minister. And President-elect Trump watched Navy upset Army at the annual Navy-Army football game. This is ABC News.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
The Bucks advanced to the finals. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. At the NBA Cup in Las Vegas, the Bucks with a 110-102 win over Atlanta. So how did Milwaukee's Andre Jackson Jr. and the Bucks do to slow down the Hawks' Trae Young, who had 35 points? Doc Rivers.
You know, our game plan was to try to make him play against one-on-one. Dre deserves a lot of credit. Trae can have those games where it can hurt you. When he does that, he's not helping anybody else. And so that's what we're trying to do as much as we can. I thought we did a pretty good job of it.
The Bucks face the Thunder Tuesday night at 7:30. In the championship game. College hoops, Wisconsin over Butler, 83-74. Number 6 ranked Marquette upset, losing on the road to Dayton, 71-63. NFL, Packers and the Seahawks tonight on Sunday Night Football. I asked Jaden Reed if quarterback Jordan Love is doing a better job of finding the open receiver.
Yeah, no doubt. J Love does a great job of identifying and, you know, finding the open man, you know, when we have to adjust the route. Yeah, no doubt.
That's Packers wide receiver Jaden Reed. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. A little rain in the morning, otherwise patchy fog, clouds and highs in the lower 40s, a light southeast breeze. Overnight, the clouds stay with us, lows only dropping back to the upper 30s. Then on Monday, cloudy and breezy with highs in the lower 40s. Right now, it's 37.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. We reported recently on the impact of Shelby County versus Holder, the U.S. Supreme Court's decision invalidating Section 5 of the 1965 Voting Rights Act. Anticipating even more erosion of the VRA, some states have passed their own state VRAs. It's not only the dismantling of Section 5, the preclearance requirements for states with a history of discrimination. The conservative justices also made proving racial gerrymandering harder under Section 2, and they've made it easier for a state legislature to dilute minority voting power. And in the lower courts, more cases attempting to keep individual voters from bringing voting rights lawsuits under the VRA are pending. With dwindling protections from the federal government, California, Washington, Oregon, Virginia, New York, Connecticut, and Minnesota have enacted state VRAs. Michigan, Maryland, New Jersey, and Florida have efforts underway. The NAACP Legal Defense Fund recommends that state VRAs should have preclearance requirements for municipalities which have patterns of discrimination. Rules should include a prohibition against vote denial or dilution through gerrymandering, strong protections against intimidation or deception, language assistance, a statewide database to make evidence-based decisions on election administration, and a directive to the state judiciary to support pro-voter and pro-democracy decisions. We have the recommendations at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
The Todd Alba Show.
We're going to meet each other out in beautiful Seattle. My youngest godson lives out there. He works for the Navy at the Bremerton Naval Shipyard.
Oh, this is like your trip to L.A. There's always a connection over here.
Well, sure, because there's no hotel cost. I crash on people's couches, right?
You are as innovative as you are cheap. That's a beautiful thing. You are correct. Thrifty, my friend. Are you sure Todd's a former Republican? Yes. Yes, he is.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Hi, this is Representative Charisse Davids from Kansas. I'm Ho-Chunk, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by the Minnesota Historical Society, preserving and sharing Minnesota's heritage for the benefit of all Minnesotans.
Hey, before we say goodbye to Ruth Anna Buffalo, we wondered if there was anything happening at Minnesota Indian Women's Resource Center in Minneapolis. If you could just give us a quick update before we let you go.
Yes, thank you. We have our winter market this Friday, Friday the 13th at 2300 15th Avenue South in Minneapolis at Minnesota Indian Women's Resource Center. It will begin at 10 a.m. and end at 2 p.m. We have a food sale and all of the vendor slots are full at this time. So it'll be a good time in the community room this Friday the 13th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Is our winter market. So that's kind of the big thing on the docket. We were going to have a monthly community meeting tonight, but due to like the construction on the top two floors, we canceled or postponed. So we'll have a community event in January. We're also looking forward to storytelling in January as well. And check our website for updates, miwrc.org, and also feel free to donate also at miwrc.org.
Big Peenigi, thank you so much for coming on. And again, thank you for what you do for the community and your family and your nation. Thank you so much, Ruth Anna Buffalo.
Lots of good odds. Thank you both.
We'll see you. Hey, we have our friend now. We're moving along here. We have Rita Arndt, Program and Outreach Manager with Native American Initiatives at the Minnesota Historical Society. And Rita, I said that all in one breath.
Wow, good for you. I'm so proud of you.
Yeah, well, all those years of smoking cigarettes, I still got it. Hey, a lot going on at the Minnesota Historical Society, and I know we want to talk a little bit about reconnecting our roots program. And I always say roots, but it's roots.
Is it roots? I'm not sure. I'm not going to police anybody on the pronunciation of it, but more importantly, like for short, we call it ROAR. So if that's helpful at all, because I think that's we love our acronyms over Native American Initiatives.
Yeah. And I'm slow on those, but yeah, talk a little bit about it. And I know there's applications due pretty soon. So let's let our listeners out there and Turtle Island know about this.
Yeah, so it's a program for Native teens in the Twin Cities, and we have usually a winter session and a summer session. And the winter session will start in January in about a month, but the applications are due by Friday, this Friday, the 13th. Ooh, spooky. But there is several weeks of after-school activities regarding culture and history at the History Center in St. Paul, but also at some of our other sites like the Mill City Museum. We're going to go to the James J. Hill House and do some art there. So there's a lot of different activities that students are in. So if you know any high school age students who are interested, please send them our way, and we are happy to we'll feed them, and we will hopefully instill them with some traditional knowledge as well.
Right on. And that's who's eligible? Let's talk about that for a sec.
Any Native American students who are high school age, so we're looking 14 to 18, that are able to get to the History Center after school for those days. So we do help with mileage and stuff, reimbursements and stuff like that, but we need to make sure they can get to the History Center. So whether that is like riding with your parents, some students are really savvy about taking the bus, and I'm very, I'm surprised, but maybe it's just because I don't know if I could do that as a teenager, but so I'm impressed with their, how they could public transport needs.
So. Yeah, I had to do that before I was 16, and before I could drive around, I had to know the buses around the Twin Cities, and unless it was dark out and I pushed my car down the alley and started it so I wouldn't wake my parents. But that we can get anywhere in the Twin Cities with our buses and light rails and all that. Hey, what kind of stuff should they expect to learn in this program?
So we are the Historical Society, so a lot of things we do talk about is history. So hopefully there is some interest in history for the students. So hopefully social studies is their favorite subject. But if not, we do also include a lot of different cultural activities, including drum and dance. We are going to do some artwork, too, and play some games and all kinds of things. So we try to mix it up as much as we can so not it doesn't get boring. We're trying not to bore the teens. And also we want to be kind of cool, so we have to engage the teens in a certain way as well. But like, we play Noshke games, which is always fun to play with the youth, and we always like to do a food sovereignty demo, so we bring in a chef, indigenous chef, and then more importantly they get a cook, so it's like hands-on activities as well, so you're not necessarily just being talked at. It's an engagement, it's a continuation of being able to engage in your culture and your history in a different way.
So will you be there? I think I asked you this last time. Will be there helping facilitate this as Rita, the teacher or the educator?
Yeah. So I'm going to teach. One of the things I always do is the behind the scenes, visiting the collections and some of our older historic items of beadwork, quillwork, basketry, all kinds of things. I always love to talk about that. That's my wheelhouse. So being in that space and being able to share it with students is kind of really exciting. And I hope it's a lot of fun for them. And then our home native Minnesota, I always tell them the jokes that are related to the exhibits as well, to be like, oh, there was this funny story of how this came about. So really like getting that inside info, so they know a little more than that just there. So they kind of feel special.
Yeah. That would be good for adults too, because I know we have kind of a pan Indian thing going on, but the Ojibwe were really the dream catcher people, and started the jingle dress and things like that. So there's a lot of history that kind of gets mixed together.
Oh, definitely. If we wanted to talk about Ojibwe contributions to the society, I would love to talk Supreme Ojibwe.
Easy.
But we don't have enough time for that.
Yeah. No, but there, I guess my point is there are different, we're not all the same here, us woodland Indians in the Midwest.
Yeah. And I know we're trying to, there's a lot of our content that's really focused on Dakota and Ojibwe narratives, but we are trying to diversify to include our Ho-Chunk relatives, our Meskwaki relatives, knowing that this place that is now Minnesota wasn't always just Dakota and Ojibwe, right? There was so many people moving through and those relationships. So we're doing all kinds of different projects to kind of bring in those narratives to be able to add more to the story. And we're never taking away anybody's story. We're always adding to the story and completing the story.
So how many days a month is this program?
Oh, it's only one. This in the winter session, it's one evening a week. So Thursday evenings. And 1, 2, 3, 4. I think it's 8 weeks. I was like, I'm counting. It's 8 weeks. Yeah. So it's 2 months that we spend with us. It's not terrible. And to be able to, in a couple hours of those nights after school, and the great thing too is that students participate, get a stipend. So we're trying to not like put sugar on top of it, but be like, hey, you spent this time engaging in your culture and history, really being determined to learn more, to be intentionally there, to be in a space to with other Native teens as well, to create like some kind of relationship. So it just shows, I feel like, a lot of commitment for young teens, which is, I think, is also something that is really good to instill in them.
Well, it's a big commitment from the Minnesota Historical Society and your group too, and the cost, I do believe, is free, and you get a stipend, and that's amazing, and that we're at this point in our, or I should say my life, but at this point in our living time, is that you have this great initiative going on.
Yeah, and I'm just so grateful to be able, and I'm hoping in the future we'll be able to develop things for younger kids as well, because we're starting with the teens. We have plenty of programs for adults, I feel like, but really engaging at a younger ages, because it is like our culture and history should be, you know, taught continuously. And it's so how can we make it more accessible for all of our people?
Well, I know you're set up there with your husband's gaming area there, and you have a better mic than me and headphones. I know your staff is doing some narrative things. And Rita, are you one of the voiceover people?
Well, so it's our narrative things. That, like, I have done voiceover work for some of our textbook thing, but there's a big project right now. I'm not sure if either of you are aware, but the Historical Society creates the sixth grade social studies textbook that is taught in 80% of Minnesota schools. And in sixth grade, that's Minnesota studies. So it's very specific on the history of Minnesota. And right now they are in the developing the third edition of that textbook. So with that, we're reviewing all the chapters. We're reviewing all the extra videos and other resources to add so that teachers have the right tools they need to be able to teach Minnesota history. And like a huge part of Minnesota history, I think we know, is the indigenous history. And so we're lucky that there are several chapters on those, but we are working specifically to make sure that there is more accurate and appropriate and up-to-date information, because it's been a decade since it was last updated, to really share contemporary stories in the now and not things that I know the youth think this stuff from 10 years ago is way old. So we have to make those updates to keep up with the kids.
Yeah, definitely. Hey, we're with Rita Arndt, Program and Outreach Manager with Native American Initiatives at the Minnesota Historical Society. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to grill you with some more questions here and see how you do. But we really appreciate all the work that you do. It's fantastic. And we'll be right back. This is Native Roots Radio.
You're listening to Oshkosh Air Support, WISS, the Fox Valley's home of Mino and the Mayor.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. Big news in Wisconsin this month, as much of the controversial anti-union Act 10 law was struck down in a ruling by Dane County Circuit Court Judge Jacob Frost. Two takeaways on this. One, the ruling gets at the heart of what has always made this law so brazenly political, by defining public safety employees differently from general public employees. That decision was pretty clearly made not based on across-the-board policy, but on which unions backed Scott Walker for governor in 2010. It would be fitting if that is what ultimately spells the end for this controversial law. Secondly, this case is headed to an appeal, which almost certainly will end up at the Wisconsin Supreme Court. While this case still might be decided by the court's current 4-3 liberal majority, it's a good reminder of just how important the upcoming race for state Supreme Court will be.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area and on our website at civicmedia.us.
This is the Fox Valley's Real News and Great Conversation, WISS.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Oh-ho! This is Dallas Goldtooth, and you're listening to the Native Roots Radio. Hoka, hecha, wecha.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by Howling for Wolves, protecting wolves for future generations.
Howl!
Howl!
I only heard two voices there, but hey, we are here with two howls. That's kind of hard to say. I really had to move my mouth. But hey, we're here with Rita Arndt, Program and Outreach Manager with the Native American Initiatives at the Minnesota Historical Society. And we're just talking about all the good things. I also want you, every time you come on, I think it's such a great thing that you guys do on Thursdays to mention that right off the bat, so our people listening can be reminded of that.
Yeah, every Thursday at the History Center in St. Paul, it's our free night, so free admission. So come see our exhibits. We have two Native exhibits, Our Home, a Native Minnesota, and Reframing Our Stories. And we also have a Native aspect in the Girlhood exhibit around res ball. So there's a lot of stuff to see at the exhibit. So please come and visit, and for free, because that's the best day to go.
Yeah, definitely. And look for Rita around there. And we were talking earlier too that we're doing Shakopee's Native Roots Trading Post is going to be out at Shakopee this weekend too. And we'll be selling Kathy Coates' book out there as we did at the fair, and we did so well. And that's a Minnesota Historical Society publication.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up. How timely! I actually met with our MNHS Press today with their editorial staff to really talk about how we can collaborate and work better together, because they have a really good longstanding reputation of working with Native authors to really share those like undertold stories. And I brought up the Ho-Chunk, Kathy Coatsburg, the Banished Forever, because it is something that so many people do not know or are familiar with, because we're so Dakota and Ojibwe centric that we want to share this history more. What does that look like? And having a book like that is really helping pave the path so that we can share that throughout not only the press, but maybe through some of our sites, our exhibits, and other content that MNHS helps create.
Yeah, definitely. And I know we talk about the Northern Lights book too, that interactive ebook, you know, that provides social studies curriculum. And that's so exciting to hear, because, you know, it became law here in Minnesota a few years ago. And I think at the first part, in the beginning, it was a little hard to find some curriculum. So Minnesota Historical Society is stepping up is just awesome.
Yeah, and we have a wonderful teacher education department. They're all former teachers, so they have been in the classroom. They know what tools are needed and how to talk with teachers about their needs. So that's a really great thing, because I don't have that background. So to be able to match them with how to develop curriculum and how to really tell these stories, especially at a sixth grade level, and me with the knowledge, like I know the history, I know how to share these stories, but like what's the best approach for some of these students? And it is really great to be able to highlight some of those things that a lot of folks don't know. So let's get the kids to know, because I think one of my favorite things is having the youth share what they've learned with the, you know, adults in their life and be like, oh, did you know this? And they'd be like, well, I wasn't taught that in school. And you're like, well, let's talk about why and think about how it is important. How great that Minnesota does have those standards to include Dakota and Ojibwe, and hopefully going forward more of those stories to be embedded into what is taught today.
Yeah, a really good point. And you know how that gets into how you're assisting the educators and the teaching the students about Native culture, and it's so important. And we always have to remind, and I think we were talking about this a little earlier, especially with the Ho-Chunk story of being banished here, is that, you know, when we were here before colonization, there were no boundaries.
Yeah, and that's another, like, I always love to, like, demystify some of these stereotypes, these myths, because the people are like, oh, they were fighting each other all the time, all this and this. I'm like, no. I was like, yes. And our level of kinship amongst our tribes was so much stronger and deeper than any kind of fighting. So I was like, I'm trying to embed that. Today I was reviewing a chapter on treaties, and I was like, well, yes, we had separate treaties, but there's so much more amongst our tribes that we work together and that have lasted even throughout all of this colonization and everything that we still hold on to today. And I'm really like trying to embed that into things like this textbook so that people understand that.
Yeah. Wow. That's exciting. We only got a few more minutes, but I wanted to ask you, was your team involved with the Minnesota Wild hockey team when they recently had their Native American Heritage Month, where they had jerseys and masks? Because I'm still waiting for my jersey. Oh, wow.
No, I was like, we have acquired one of the masks that Cole Red Horse Taylor designed. We work with Cole Taylor a lot. He was a former artist in residence. He's a friend of us. We're actually going to be installing a case for him in the Our Home Native Minnesota with some of his works that he's done. So stay tuned for that. I was like, spoiler alert, that'll be happening very soon. And we've been working really closely with him to really have his voice heard. So it is directly from the source.
Yeah, that's exciting. And amplifying and knowing all the artists here. And, you know, one of the interesting things that we talk about here on Native Roots Radio, because the Minneapolis Public Schools has reported that there's over 150 different tribes that are in Minnesota, which in Minneapolis specifically, which blew my mind. And also I heard the statistic that we have like 75,000 urban Indians here, and that's an amazing, both those are amazing numbers.
Yeah, and how part of how we've approached that at the Historical Society is that exhibit Reframing Our Stories, which really tells the you know, when the 60s and 70s, when a lot of our urban natives were, you know, are like, we need to create our own organizations, we need to create our own schools, we need to create our own things, and the legacies that they've left us. So it is something that we were like, urban, it's like, it's a whole thing, and it's a completely different aspect of history, but it's like, we're still indigenous. Like, we just happen to be living not on the reservation, and we always have been too. So getting that instilled to people's minds that it's not always been the reservation. We've always inhabited these spaces.
And I want to bring Haley in for just a second, because I love that quote from the documentary from Anna May that you bring up, and it talks about, you know, when they tried to get us into the cities and destroy us, what made us stronger. Do you remember the quote?
Yeah.
I'm sorry to put you on the spot.
I know it was kind of along what you just said, but yeah, the Allotment Act and being pushed into urban settings was meant to like diminish our culture. And instead it kind of had the opposite effect. It kind of put us urban Indians together with different kind of practices from neighboring tribes. And that kind of made us stronger.
Yeah. And I believe that too. And that happens, you know, with the natives that were here in the 60s and 70s. And when you talk about Minnesota Historical Society, that's recent history, and that's our history too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I will always share the urban story, because I think there's so much that we've learned from it. And the reason that my department exists, I think, is because of the people who've paved the way, from the urban natives who have paid the way for us. So Jimmy Gwich to them.
Well, and I want to say a big peeny gigi to you for being on and talking about what's happening at the Minnesota Historical Society. I think it's a thing that needs to be get on and talk about on top of the mountains, and let people know that it's a safe educational place for us and all our allies to come down and learn more about us. And that's what it's all about.
Yeah, and we're always happy if you ever want to stop by and talk more about the exhibits, what resources we have. We have a library. Just let me know, and I'm happy to host you. I'm happy to bring you in.
Right on. You know, I love books. So, hey, thank you very much, Peeny Gigi, for being on, and we'll see you in a couple weeks.
All right.
All right. Hey, if you're listening to the show, you're part of the resistance. From Chief Plenty Coops, the ground in which we stand on is sacred ground. It's the blood of our ancestors. We need to resist, divest, join a group, run for office. We're still here. We are the seventh generation.
And free Leonard Peltier. Now.
You're listening to Oshkosh Air Support, WISS, home for Matt and Air on Air.
From the lakeshore to Lake Winnebago.
Door to Fond du Lac counties.
Northeast Wisconsin is special for many different reasons. I'm Lisa Hale.
And I'm Terry Barr. Family and fun.
Safe communities and friends. We're featuring all of it as part of New Wisco Weekend, a news magazine show just for you, and highlighting what makes the Fox Valley and Green Bay area a great place to live.
Join us.
New Wisco Weekend, Saturday mornings at 8, Sundays at 11 on WGBW and WISS and the Civic Media app.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app. Thank you for listening to WISS Berlin, the Fox Valley's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. New York Governor Kathy Hochul said this has gone too far after drone reports caused slow airport traffic at Stewart Airport north of New York City Friday. New Jersey officials say they need more federal authority to deal with the drone sightings, but federal authorities are saying something else, says ABC's Raina Roy.
The FBI also getting involved here, saying less than 100 of 5,000 tips required further investigation. Federal officials reaffirming there is no obvious threat or criminal activity, but also admitting there are drones flying over New Jersey that cannot be identified and calling the public response a slight overreaction.
President Biden spoke with South Korea's acting president, that country in a political crisis after voting to oust the president over his decision to declare martial law. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said the U.S. has been in touch with the rebel group that ousted Syria's leader, even though the U.S. has designated that group a terror organization. This is ABC News.
Lisa Hale with WISS News. Your news in depth. Find it in the news section at WISS.FM.